Welcome to the third installment of Sedgwick Institute Live, where I will profile influential thought leaders who make a difference and whose interests lie in the risk and insurance world. I'm Chris Mandel, director of the Sedgwick Institute, and my guest today is Dr. Robert Hartwig, formerly president of the Insurance Information Institute and now co-director of the University of South Carolina Moore Center for Risk and Uncertainty, as well as a faculty member of the Moore School of Business. So this is part two of my conversation with Dr. Hartwig, and I hope you enjoy.
So you recently reported that work comp has been a positive contributor to the industry's performance. And I'd like to understand, from your perspective, what are some of the key drivers of the effect, and do you have any opinions about alternatives to work comp, such as Texas non-subscription, or option legislation, such as has been set up in Oklahoma?
Well, you know, workers' compensation results have improved markedly, and I think faster than anyone imagined over the past few years. I mean, as recently as 2011 or so, the combined ratio was 115, and it's come down rapidly to about 94, 95 in 2015 for private carriers. And so,
what do you attribute that's radical improvement
to? Well, a couple of things. I mean, the numbers were really bad, so there was an urgency to getting rates through. And so many carriers pushed up prices several years back, and that's worked its way through the system. And that's been a major improvement. Now, the other areas that have produced improvement, there have been some reforms in various states on the margins. There's been a tighter control of certain types of expenses that have been mushrooming, including certain types of pharmaceuticals. So insurers have done a good job at managing these costs at the same time while driving rate through the system. And we've not, and as the economy has improved, we've seen more payroll exposures adding to the industry's top line premium growth. But at the same time, we've not seen what sometimes happens is could be a significant surge in claim frequency and severity. So we've not really seen that. And in fact, we've also been helped out by relatively tepid increases in healthcare costs compared to, say, 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. So that we've benefited from that more modest trend in healthcare costs. But, you know, Rick Victor, here, who you've interviewed already, is certainly far more of an expert on that than I am. So it's not one particular item, but it's a combination of things. The question is can the industry hold it together and maintain a combined ratio in the 94-95 range, which is really where it needs to be, if not even a bit better than that, to generate a reasonable rate of return in this very long-tailed and sometimes volatile line of coverage. Now, there have been, in terms of challenges to traditional workers' compensation, there have been a number of states that have entertained the idea of alternatives whereby an employer could basically take out some other form of coverage besides workers' compensation and operate outside the traditional workers' compensation environment, such as we already have in Texas and has been sort of experimented with in Oklahoma a bit. Most of these efforts have been beaten back. Not only traditional insurers generally oppose it, but many labor groups oppose it, and once educated about it, many legislators are a little bit hesitant to basically allow an alternative to a system that's been around for the better part of a century in most states, and then allow another system to run in parallel to that. So again, while you can always question about whether workers' compensation costs could be any lower, the system with all its warts actually works, and it is true to its roots, and you do, generally speaking, have good outcomes in the sense that workers who are injured are, in fact, treated, and their lost wages are compensated for, their medical expenses are paid for, and most importantly, they are returned to work. So that system generally works. Most other alternatives in terms of disability systems don't actually function all that well. But I would expect that there will be forces that continue to try to promote alternatives to workers' compensation out there. It's possible that they could meet with success in a state or two over the next couple of years. I mean, they are lobbying hard, and in some states they may be sufficiently persuasive to allow the option.
Do you think having the option is healthy from an economist's perspective?
Well, I mean, an economist would normally be predisposed to say that that the more options, the better. The question is are the safeguards that have been in place for the better part of a century that protect the interests of workers in terms of compensating them for their lost injuries and their lost wages and their families in the event that a worker is killed, are these in any way diminished, and or are costs being shifted into other systems? So in part, some of these alternatives rely on some of the most expensive and chronic cases, that these costs would be shifted to other sources of funding, like Medicaid, for example, or some other source. And so so it's a little disingenuous to say that the system delivers at lower cost if, in fact, the costs are just merely being shifted elsewhere. So I can see why there are parties that would want to shift costs elsewhere, but to me, that's just playing a shell game.
Yeah. No, those are some of the very significant questions that have been posed and the pushback against it, for sure. And I think that's probably an area of research and study that's probably long overdue. So let's change subjects here. You've reported recently on the sharing economy, also what you call the on-demand economy. I'm wondering what characteristics of that are really defining the transaction in insurance, and how is this impacting the workforce and the industry itself?
Yeah, the sharing economy, the on-demand economy, has been referred to as the gig economy. This is a growing segment of the economy whereby people offer their services or their property on online platforms, and they offer them to the world, in effect. And what that does is that fundamentally changes the risk profile both of you as an individual offering your services as well as your property, offering them to the public in general. If your home, for example, is going to be converted into what amounts to be a place of lodging, that is a fundamental transformation of risk, despite the fact that it's the same property. If you are accustomed to, you know, doing a lot of do-it-yourself projects around your own home, and you decide to offer your skills in an online platform, that fundamentally changes your risk profile. And so what insurers have been able to do, and I think quite astutely here, is look at this trend and say that, you know, if I'm offering my vehicle for public transport, my home for public lodging, my body and my mind for public use, then I have certain exposures here that need to be addressed. And I think there are two things that need to happen. Those who are offering their services, generally speaking, on online platforms need to be aware of those risks. And insurers need to be cognizant of how to fill those gaps. And I think insurers are filling those gaps. I think where there's a little bit of a concern is that individuals don't necessarily understand their exposures. So people will offer up their home to complete strangers, not understanding that the strangers might totally trash their home, and their insurance coverage won't provide protection. In the early days of Uber, people thought they could just jump in their cars and start transporting people around the city, and their standard private passenger auto coverage would protect them, when in fact it won't, because you've become, in effect, a livery risk rather than just a private passenger auto risk. And the same thing, if you're going to be offering your services as an electrician, you have other types of risks that you are going to incur, certain types of liability risks when you're doing work on other person's property. And again, all of these have solutions, and they're available, they're affordable, But I think that generally speaking, what needs to happen is the insurance coverage needs to be made compulsory, as it has in effect been done with transportation network companies like Uber, where the driver has to carry coverage, or Uber has to carry coverage, or both. And I think that kind of arrangement needs to become ubiquitous. So we need to make sure that those parties that are creating risks and hazards are paying for the possibility of that occurring, and rather than trying to shunt those costs and risks to other parties. It's the most efficient solution is for those entities that are creating the risk to bear that risk, and that is the beauty of insurance, and that's the most economically efficient solution.
Very good. I've had a little bit of insights into what Google's been doing with the driverless car and some of the other insurance interests that they're expressing, and the good news is they're very much wanting to understand and get aligned with insurance regulatory opinion about, you know, the areas that are of concern to them. So hopefully as those things move forward and things like them, you know, entrepreneurs and others will take a similar route, and we'll all be better off as a result of it. Let me turn a corner here, one more corner down this road. You know, Cedric, being in the claim management and productivity management business, I have to ask you if you have any thoughts on the role of the claim professional relative to some of these industry trends that you've been tracking. How do you see the future of claims management?
Yeah, I think that like many other dimensions of the industry, whether we're talking about, you know, underwriting or, you know, the actuarial profession, many other segments, it's going to become more technology-driven. That's already happening. I think that that the adjusting process will increasingly become more and more automated with everything from information, more information, for instance, after property losses being gathered from drones, or being gathered remotely from sensors that are in vehicles or in property, so that the insurance company knows what is happening real time and or knows what has happened almost immediately after the fact, and I think that claims professionals are going to have to rapidly adopt to understanding that kind of technology, and in fact try to move that technology going forward. Now, it doesn't mean that the day of the adjuster visiting a policyholder in a time of distress is over with. It doesn't mean that an adjuster will not be visiting a workplace to find out why certain accidents happen. But I think at every step along the way, there's going to be a technology component to this to try to where it won't be just about, well, what happened? We're going to cut you a check. It's more about collecting detailed information that's going to be used elsewhere, fed back into the underwriting process, fed back into the pricing of the risk that allows the insurer to develop and create protocols that would help reduce these types of losses going forward. And so I think that every claims professional becomes more technologically savvy, becomes more integrated with underwriting, marketing, the actuarial profession than they had been in the past. And I think that's a good thing. That kind of versatility is, I think, will be exactly what senior insurance professionals need in their dossier of experience as they move up the ladder. I think it actually creates more opportunities for people on the claims side to move up at the senior management of companies, because I think that there's a great opportunity for technology to be adopted very quickly on the claims side, and an individual who demonstrates that kind of, you know, technology savviness that gives the company an edge is going to be the type of person that management identifies for promotion and reward within a company.
Well, I love that opinion. I mean, I started in the claim business back in the day with Liberty Mutual, and at the time I was a field investigator with a company car, mm-hmm. spending 4 of the 5 days of the week, you know, meeting people, investigating in person. And, of course, that changed about 10 years into my career. And mm-hmm. we now recognize that our advocacy is first and foremost for our claimants that we think are more appropriately labeled consumers. And, yes, we have obligations to our client employers that are very important and right up there in the same priority. But I think we would say advocating for the best outcome for injured workers and then others affected by risks and accidents is becoming increasingly our priority. So getting the right skill sets of people to do that, to use technology as well, to do that more effectively and efficiently, is a lot of what we're about. So that's a great segue to what probably is my near last question. And now that you're in the university environment where you always wanted to be, what is your advice to undergrads who are thinking about or maybe at some point asked to think about a career in the insurance industry? How do they prepare for that? How do we sell it to them?
And I think, you know, you hear a lot about surveys that young people just simply they don't think about insurance, or if they do think about it, they rank it relatively lowly mm-hmm. in terms of potential careers that they are you know, thinking about. And you know, we have nobody to blame but ourselves for not selling our own profession in a way that's a bit better. Now, as it turns out, if you survey people about their thoughts about careers in insurance, what influences young people the most is if they actually know an insurance professional. And if they know an insurance professional, they have a far more favorable view of working in the business. I think in this industry we tend to have a bit of an inferiority complex. And we somehow automatically think that, well, no one would ever want to work in this business, and everybody sort of falls into this business by accident. I think that there are many industries and many careers out there that people are generally unaware of the day they set foot in college or the day they discharge from the military or some other normal entry point for this industry. And I think we can do an awful lot to, and this is what I do in my classrooms. Yes, I'm teaching the basics. My students will understand how an insurance company works, how enterprise risk management programs need to be implemented. But at the same time, they are getting a dose of what the real life of the insurance professional of the future can be like. If you want to be involved in technology risks, if you want to be involved in energy risks and you want to do this from a platform in some location like a Bermuda or a London, or you want to just stay in your own hometown, this is an industry that has a job for you. I mean, you can literally, in some sense, because the graying of this industry, almost any motivated, analytically driven person can almost write their own ticket. And they could, they can work where they want at the company that they want to work at. And if they want to work in some other part of the world, they should be able to do that as well, so long as they work hard. So there are probably more opportunities, not only for there are hundreds of thousands of opportunities in this industry, maybe upwards of 400,000 over the next 4 or 5 years. And then beyond that, because of the large number of retirements that are occurring, the opportunities for advancement are probably better than they are in most other industries as well. And beyond all of that, there's the opportunity to make a good salary. And to no matter what you are interested in, whether it's technology, whether it's engineering, whether it's whether it's the financial side of things, the legal side of things, or if you are simply motivated by helping out people in your community, you know, to be an agent, to be an adjuster, you know, a claims professional, these can help all help you realize those goals and earn a living at the same time. But it's about presenting all of these opportunities to people who are in colleges and universities or even high schools, or again, people coming out of the military, to make them aware of these careers, and they can be very rewarding careers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to finish that off, I like to think of the supply chain, if you will, in the vertical industry as being one where there's just a tremendous diversity of ways in which you can use the same or similar skill sets, whether it's underwriters or intermediaries or service providers or the buyer themselves from the risk management side. It's like I always said in the risk world, you know, the risk people, if they're really good at what they do, are probably some of the best people to understand the business from A to Z, because they're the ones that are able to manage risk most effectively when they understand the exposures. And so I always pushed people out into the business when I could and brought them back in when I could as well, to leverage that need for the greater knowledge of operations. So there's lots of opportunity in this industry. I agree with you. Well, Bob, I want to thank you for your time today and all the insights you've given us. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure. Anytime.
And I want to thank those who have taken the time to come to SedgwickInstitute.com and listen to my interview with Bob and explore the SSI Live channel. You can find Dr. Victor's and my speaking and writing schedules as well as other resources at this website. I hope you'll consider joining the Institute's LinkedIn group titled Sedgwick Institute, where we dialogue daily on issues of importance to stakeholders in the risk and insurance world. Until next month, when we'll have our third installment of SI Live, when I'll be interviewing Lori Solomon, former head of risk management for Coca-Cola. In the meantime, I urge you to use your expertise and influence to make a difference whenever and wherever you can to make this industry better.